Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Nu är det dags att relaxa. Du ser dig själv hos en Toyota-verkstad. Du servar bilen och får upp till ett års garanti. Du servar igen och får upp till ett års garanti till. Med Toyota Relax kan du få garanti tills bilen är 10 år. Se villkor och boka på toyota.se.
Wie bei Vertex wissen, dass die Geschwindigkeit des globalen Handels zunimmt, was eine Steuerverwaltung komplexer macht. Und ihre unternehmenseigenen Systeme sind nicht dafür ausgelegt, diese Steuerkomplexität zu bewältigen. Hier setzen wir mit unserer Plattform an, die Continuous Compliance ermöglicht. So erhalten Sie mehr Transparenz, mehr Genauigkeit und mehr Vertrauen in Ihre Steuerdaten. Sie wollen mehr über Continuous Compliance erfahren? Dann besuchen Sie vertexinc.com/de.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Rob Young. On this edition, the United States has sharply increased border taxes on goods coming from China. We'll ask what this will mean for both nations and their businesses, and assess if this is yet another trade war between the world's two most important economies. Also this half hour, Japan has suffered what's often called three lost economic decades. Well, Japan's about to get a new prime minister, so what's his plan? And the workers being fooled by artificial intelligence clones of their boss. Would you be able to tell the difference?
I enjoy participating in triathlons, marathons and wild swimming.
Oh, it is AI, isn't it?
It's AI. It's definitely AI. I said it was AI to start with. The blinking was so weird.
That report coming up later. Remember, you can email us at any time on world.business@bbc.co.uk. So, is another trade war brewing between the United States and China? Today, Friday, sweeping new border taxes, or tariffs as they're called, have come into effect. These include a 100% tax on imported Chinese electric cars into America. The tariffs were announced back in May in response to what the White House then called China's unfair trade practices and the need to protect American jobs. Well, China says the new tariffs are uncalled for and has threatened to retaliate. With more, here's the BBC's North America business correspondent, Michelle Fleury.
As well as a rise on EV tariffs, levies on solar cells will increase to 50%, while rates on steel and aluminium products will more than triple to 25%. Tariff hikes on other products, including semiconductor chips, are set to take into effect over the next 2 years. The increases, which impact a relatively small amount of US imports, come as Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump have clashed over tariffs on the campaign trail.
Well, in a moment, we're going to speak to Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. But first, let's talk to Professor Mary Lovely, an expert in trade relations between the US and China. She is a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the programme. What do you make of the level of tariffs being introduced by the United States and what they are targeted on?
Yes, thanks. Great to be here. First of all, the level is, especially on EVs, is meant to be prohibitive. In other words, it's meant to make it impossible to import these vehicles. Now, whether or not that is enough, given Chinese cost advantages, is up for discussion. The U.S. is pursuing other policies to make it difficult, if not impossible, to import a Chinese vehicle into the U.S. market. Most recently, bans on the use of Chinese hardware and software inside those vehicles is under discussion and likely to come soon. So the U.S. is basically closing its markets to Chinese EV, and we see that in today's action.
And when the United States talks about unfair Chinese trade practices, what is it practically in everyday terms that the U.S. is worried about?
Well, this term unfair trade practice often expands depending on who is doing the speaking. But I think at the heart of it is the belief that these companies were subsidized not necessarily by the central government, but surely by local governments, and that subsidization gives them an unfair advantage against competing with American-based companies.
Right, and how do you think China might, we don't know, of course, but how do you think they might respond to these new tariffs from the U.S.?
That's a really good question, and it's hard to know. If they do respond significantly, I think it will be rather moderate and hit specific products that the U.S. Sells to China, but which are not critical for China or which China has easy alternative sources. China has pretty much, in my mind, decided it's not going to penetrate the U.S. market. Its EV exports have been headed south. Some of them have come into the European market, although that is a more complicated relationship, as we're seeing now with the EU considering its own set of tariffs against Chinese EVs.
That's fascinating that you think that China may have given up on trying to sell an awful lot of these very high-end electric vehicle cars into the world's biggest economy. Although China is a bigger car market than the US, there is still potentially an awful lot of money to be made for Chinese companies in America.
There are, and there are ways that China will still profit from the U.S. market. Geely does own Volvo, for example, and there are other companies that are tied to those networks. So they may be able to sell into the U.S. market in some way. The upcoming executive order, which will ban Chinese technology in so-called connected vehicles, though, is quite draconian in its limits on Chinese companies to sell in the United States. So I think that their expectations must be very low.
And do you think this could all lead to a new trade war between the world's two biggest economies?
I don't think that China wants that over the EVs. I think they see access to the European market now as more important, investment into that market. This is, I think, where they're putting their diplomatic efforts. They're also busy building a variety of different networks to expand EV production to other countries, including into the global south, where their vehicles for many countries are welcomed because of their quality and price. There are other countries, especially in Southeast Asia, which also have some concerns about the Chinese EV influx, and those are countries that want to have a part of the supply chain. So through this transition, I think more generally, we're seeing every country concerned about whether or not they're going to retain the jobs that they have in this industry, one that tends to be highly connected throughout each economy and very important politically in many places.
Thank you. That's Professor Mary Lovely there from the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Along the line is also Scott Paul, the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Thank you for joining us, Scott. Is today a good day then for American manufacturers?
Well, I think it is. The threat of an influx or a flood of Chinese EVs into the U.S. market at a time when our industry is in its infancy would be existential, extremely consequential for auto communities. And I think this was certainly the right call by the Biden-Harris administration. We're very pleased that these tariffs have gone into force.
You talk there about auto workers, people who make the vehicles. What about consumers? Are they not being denied choice, not just of a different company, but also potentially a different generation of vehicle?
That is a great question. And I think the good news is that the companies that are in the United States making electric vehicles, and mind you, there's European companies, there's Korean companies, Japanese companies, in addition to American companies making these vehicles in the United States, they're offering new models, new brands, new technology every year. You know, we're at a different stage of both consumer uptake and production than China is. And the challenge would be that a flood of Chinese vehicles would come into the market. It would wipe out all of these investments that these companies are making. And I don't know that ultimately that's great news for the American consumer. It's certainly terrible news for American workers and American auto communities. And this is not an inconsequential part of the U.S. economy. I mean, auto production accounts and its supply chain accounts for about 3% of our gross domestic product. So it is not trivial. This has serious economic consequences.
And to those critics who say this is protectionism, it is isolationism, why not just outcompete the Chinese manufacturers? What do you say?
Well, it's not a level playing field. You have the Chinese government, which have heavily subsidized these companies for a number of years, provided a captive market for them. It was involved in intellectual property theft over a number of years, has supply chains that are very questionable, and then has built up productive capacity that it can't possibly absorb at home, and it's looking to sell those vehicles abroad. And so we would be bailing out Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party. This has nothing to do with free market fundamentals. I think that the Biden-Harris administration is right to install these barriers. I think the EU has been right to look at this. I think Canada, same situation. And I'm also concerned about the kinds of data that Chinese companies would be able to capture about U.S. consumers. And that's another aspect to this, but it is a both for economic national security. I think we're making the right call here. And I think the great news is that U.S. consumers will have access to a lot of different kinds of car models that are new energy, clean energy, EVs. And we're not going to harm American jobs in the process
right.
of doing that.
Another final point, though, before we let you go, which is that many Chinese car makers are increasing their presence in Mexico, which is part of a trade agreement with the US and Canada, which is potentially a backdoor into the American market. Are you worried about that?
I am worried about that, and there's a number of ways in which we can address that in addition to these tariffs directly on vehicles coming from China. In brief, the US-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement comes up for renewal in less than 2 years. So that's one avenue. The second avenue is the data restriction that I talked about. And if the Biden administration is proposing to ban software and hardware for connected vehicles, which is virtually every vehicle on the road right now, no matter where the origin, if it is manufactured by a company that's based in what we call an entity of concern, which right now is China and Russia.
Okay.
And so that would effectively forestall vehicles coming in from Mexico as well.
Thank you. Scott Paul there, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. It'll be interesting to see what happens when that North American trade deal comes up for renewal in a couple of years' time, depending on, of course, who wins the White House. Let's have a look at some of the other big business stories around today with Shanti Kellerman, the Chief Investment Officer at M&G Wealth in London. Hi, Shanti. Let's stick with America for a moment and talk about inflation, the level of price rises there. Price rises up 2.2% on a year ago in August. It has been falling pretty sharply in the US, which suggests there will be further interest rate cuts to come.
Yeah, and there was some more data out today from the Personal Consumption and Expenditures Index, which is kind of another variation of it. It was broadly in line with expectations. You saw a little small drop in the yields on bonds. Didn't drastically change the market, but I think it confirms we're probably still on that path of inflation falling.
Yeah, we also had data from France and Spain as well. Price rises there going up by just 1.2 and 1.5% respectively, considerably lower than the worst point during the pandemic.
Yeah, so that was much, those falls were a bit more than expected. However, people have already very much priced in that in Europe, interest rates are going to be lower. Before those were announced, there was about a 90% chance that interest rates would go down at the next ECB meeting. So that hasn't moved too much because there's just not much further to go.
Right. So interest rate cuts in an awful lot of developed economies on the way then.
Well, they're on the way, but that's already been reflected in the prices that you see in markets. So I think the main risk is if something happens to change that, you'll see, you know, that's what will make bond prices change. A lot of times the market kind of moves ahead to where it thinks things are going to be in 2 months, 3 months or a year.
And very briefly, we've heard from some big online retailers in China that they've had their best trading days of the year after the Chinese government announced stimulus measures.
Yeah, very positive week in China. It seems to be a much better sentiment and for consumers, which leads to, you know, stocks like Alibaba doing well. You've also seen some of the luxury companies in Europe rally quite a bit, hoping that some of that spending will spill over to those brands as well.
Thank you, Shanti Kellerman there from M&G Wealth. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Let's go to Japan now, which is to get a new prime minister. Shigeru Ishiba, who is a former defence minister, has won the ruling LDP party's leadership election after two rounds of voting. He's taking over from the current prime minister, Fumio Kishida, who has become unpopular because of a series of party scandals and rising prices. Well, in a brief speech after his victory, Mr. Ishiba pledged to be honest with the country.
I will do my utmost to believe in the people, to speak the truth with courage and sincerity, and to make this country a safe and secure place where everyone can live with a smile on their faces once again.
Well, one of the biggest challenges facing the new prime minister will be the economy. Japan's economy has been stagnant for the best part of three decades. Recently, prices have been rising and interest rates are on their way up too. Strange experiences for a population used to little economic change. But where will economic policy sit in the new prime minister's list of priorities? I've been talking to Seijo Takeshita, who's professor at the Graduate School of Management at the University of Shizuoka in Japan.
What we need to have is a jab in the arm, but we haven't really seen that happening. And unfortunately, I don't think we are likely to see that in the near future as well.
You mentioned there that Japanese people are having to get used to a lot of things that many people simply haven't experienced in their adult life. Wage rises, price rises, inflation for the first time in decades. Also, though, economic growth as well. So things are changing.
Yeah, I mean, we are seeing inflation, but it's a cost push inflation that's induced by external prices like, you know, oil. And it's not like the, you know, demand pull inflation that you're seeing in the UK or in the US, which is based on a lot of labor shortages and personnel side. So, you know, we need to really rejuvenate the state. I mean, the state of Japan isn't as bad as many people say. But that said, I think we really need to see a next generation breakthrough, which we aren't seeing. And I think Ishiba-san is trying to do that, particularly through reforms within Japan, the domestic regional reform, which I think is also very much of a need, to say the least.
So after three decades of stagnation, how are consumers finding it? What are they doing? Are they enjoying their wage rises? Are they going out and spending more? What are they doing?
Absolutely not. The propensity to spend in Japan is very low. In my opinion, what you need to see is corporations doing well in order to soothe the mind of the Japanese consumers, or else they will not spend. It's not like in the States where you throw cash in the faces of consumers and they'll start spending. That is certainly not the case in Japan. We've witnessed this before many, many times in the past two decades. So basically what really needs to be done is not only the wage rise, but rejuvenation and say more of futuristic, I think, ideology that has to be improved.
What do you mean by futuristic ideology?
We are going to be a mature economy. We're already a mature economy. But how are we going to survive through that? You know, I think it's most important for the politicians to basically make the Japanese public aware of the opportunities that are there, because the mindset of the Japanese individuals and the corporates are being excessively conservative.
And what have we heard from the incoming prime minister? Is he likely to introduce any of the things that you think are needed?
Well, at least he has had quite a good reputation and experience as the Minister of Defense. And I think this is very important considering the fact that we are right now in midst of a very strong aggression from unitarian states like that of Russia and China. We need somebody who is not wishy-washy, boneless kind of politicians, who is extremely neutral. We need somebody who can basically spell out the words and clarify the positioning of Japan, which is part of the free world alliance. But we need somebody who is an expert in this area, and I think he can be categorized as an expert. So I think from that point of view as well, I think he is, well, I'd say a very hopeful candidate from here onwards.
So you're saying then that national security is effectively going to be the first priority and the economy will come some way down his list of priorities?
I would say that's, well, concurrent. I think it's pretty difficult to put, you know, the first and second in these agenda, because as you very well know, if the economy goes down, his popularity is also going to go down. LDP is also going to go down. So one of the most important things that he has to do is sustain the growth perpetuity of the economic side and make people happy or at least feel safe. And then he can tackle on various issues, including change of our amendments.
And there's an election due by next year anyway, so he may not have long in power.
Yeah, I mean, that's another reason why I think he was elected as the prime minister, because he can now clearly fight off against the opposition. The opposition's head has now been named as Mr. Noda on the Constitutional Democratic Party of Japan, and he is good. So you need somebody who can really, a veteran who can really argue back against him. And I think that is one of the reasons why, you know, LDP members have voted for Ishiba-san.
Professor Seijo Takashita there in Japan. Well, let's head to India now, where a surge in the price of gold is affecting festive spending. The global market price for gold hit a record on Thursday. India's gold imports tripled in the month of August, according to the World Gold Council, after the Indian government cut duties from 15% to 6% in the budget. Well, I've been speaking to Surendra Mehta from the India Bullion and Jewellers Association. Why is demand for gold surging despite rising costs?
Gold is not a commodity, not an investment, but it's life in India. That is a religion in India. There is a fear that, you know, the gold prices are getting higher and higher, and that can lower the demand. But the last month's import data of gold in India has been quite impressive, and we have imported nearly 130 tons of gold in last 1 month. And so this gold import is basically for the Diwali celebration, where people are expected to buy a huge quantity of gold. So it is an investment item as well as a consumer item.
Are people making financial sacrifices then to ensure that they can buy gold this year? Are they foregoing some things they would like to buy to make sure they can buy the gold?
There is a passion for gold in our country. The people keep buying gold. As soon as they come out of schools and college and start investing, they realize the value of gold, because it's an important gift, important item when any festival is concerned.
And it's a big part, therefore, of the economy then?
Absolutely. We already have more than 30,000 tons of gold, household gold in our country. And the figure may be more, but this is just an estimate. We also have a lot of temple gold in our country, where most of the big temples are holding the huge gold in their reserve. But very surprisingly, in spite of various government schemes to bring out that gold, the monetization of household gold has not been successful. And people keep buying gold, and that is why our consumption every year is almost between 700 to 800 tons.
Surendra Mehta there from the India Bullion and Jewellers Association. Now, one of the most dramatic technological developments of recent decades has been the speed and sophistication of generative artificial intelligence. That is a computer program that can create words, images and videos in much the same way a person can, although considerably more quickly than we can. And while there are clear potential benefits, there are also concerns. Companies are being warned about the increasing use of AI to carry out so-called chief executive fraud. One case in Hong Kong reportedly saw an AI clone used during a video meeting to trick staff into losing $25 million. But while some fear the rise of AI clones, companies including Zoom say we should be excited about a future where your clone goes to a meeting so you don't have to. Our cyber correspondent Joe Tidy and his clone reports.
Hello, Joe. What is it that Joe Tidy likes to do for fun?
I enjoy participating in triathlons, marathons and wild swimming. I also like golfing and am a movie geek.
Did you spot the difference there? The first voice was me. The second was an AI clone of me. Not just my voice, my face too, albeit a bit twitchy and with a lot of blinking.
What are your thoughts on artificial intelligence?
I believe artificial intelligence, AI, has immense transformative potential. It can revolutionize.
Aside from the long delays, it works pretty well one-on-one. But what happens if I send my clone to a work meeting?
Hi, team. Thank you very much. Sorry, I had to nip downstairs to do something. So, Joe, can you update us on what you're working on?
How's it going?
Good, thank you.
Oh, it is AI, isn't it?
It's AI. It's definitely AI. I said it was AI to start with. The blinking was so weird.
What's he saying?
People, it's pretty fascinating stuff. By the way, my connection's been a bit dodgy today, so if I'm slow to respond, you know why. So I'm ready for that one.
This AI clone was fooling no one then, but there's growing excitement about the tech. Zoom's CEO says we'll one day be able to send our clones to meetings on our behalf. But of course, criminals are experimenting too. Police in Hong Kong are investigating after cyber fraudsters used some sort of AI face and voice cloning to trick an employee during a live work video meeting. $25 million was transferred in the fake deal in February, thought to be the first case of criminals using live cloning tools to carry out so-called CEO fraud. But voice cloning attacks are now far more common.
Martin, upon signing the NDI, I will be able to furnish you with additional details to ensure the successful completion of this operation.
In his central London office, Martin Greenfield, the CEO of security company Cube Orbis, shows me the voice notes that he thought were from his new boss.
Yeah, I mean, they were quite lifelike. And actually, later on in the process, when I actually forwarded these to someone who's known him for years, he actually said, OK, well, that actually could be Marco.
Martin was very nearly tricked into transferring £800,000 to the criminals.
So presumably the criminals would have taken maybe even that video, put it through a machine, then made your bespoke voice notes.
Absolutely. And you need a few seconds, apparently, of speech to work with, and they pick up the mannerisms, they pick up the kind of way in the language and the way it's used, and actually quite believable.
Martin only spotted the scam after triple-checking an email address used by the scammers pretending to be a lawyer. All the perils and positives of AI clones are coming at us fast.
Great to see you back. What would you like to talk about today?
My clone's creator, Suna Linnerup from Freya AI, says there is real potential in this technology.
There are differences in expectations. If I'm telling you I have created a digital twin, it acts exactly like me, you would pretty soon tell me that, no, this is not you. On the other hand, if I say, hey, I have an assistant, it's an AI, you'd have a completely different set of expectations. Face swapping technology does cost a lot of money to do right. But again, everything gets cheaper and it happens so fast.
Clearly, we're going to have to start working a lot harder to make sure we know who's on the other side of that screen.
If you ever have more questions or want to chat again, feel free to reach out. Have a wonderful day.
Joe Tidy reporting. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World Business Report.
Nu är det dags att relaxa. Du ser dig själv hos en Toyota-verkstad. Du servar bilen och får upp till ett års garanti. Du servar igen och får upp till ett års garanti till. Med Toyota Relax kan du få garanti tills bilen är 10 år. Se villkor och boka på toyota.se.
Money talks, and it gave him the power to manipulate people.
This is a story of power and control at the very top of British society.
It seemed like he really cared for me, wanted to look after me, almost in a fatherly way.
How Mohammed Al-Fayed, then owner of the luxury department store Harrods, groomed, isolated, and attacked young women who worked for him.
He had done this for so long.
And now, they refuse to be silenced.
I would have to enter his private office on my own. That's where things would start to happen.
World of Secrets, Season 4. Al-Fayed, Predator at Harrods. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.